And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello and welcome to the Sports Kings from Queens. Today is Wednesday, July 12th, and it's a two-man show tonight since Gino is taking a well-deserved vacation with the family. So Darren and I are here to cover the world of sports. Remember, you can listen to us anywhere you get your podcasts. Please like and subscribe. Follow us on Facebook and send us your thoughts, posts, questions, anything that's on your mind. We are at the All-Star break, the unofficial halfway point of the season, and we'll take a close look at the Yankees and Mets and a few other thoughts in baseball, and then we'll get to the rest of the sports world. Darren, how are you tonight?
Doing fantastic. Just fabulous. No sports really to watch outside of this Gold Cup match. Yeah, it's dull. I'm not an ESPYs guy, even though I have been to an ESPYs, but it was way back in the day when before it got really politicized and became a little bit more than I wanted to deal with. So I haven't been there since the year before Valvano was the last time I went. So obviously I missed it by one epic year. The way it goes, still one of the best speeches of all time, though.
Oh, in anything. It's the best speech, period. Not just sports.
I agree.
Wonderful speech by Valvano.
I mean, a man that with tumors all over his body and can barely make it up on the plane, yakking all the way up. Krzyzewski holding him, his wife holding him. He couldn't even make it up onto the stage. And once he got there, you wouldn't even know the guy was sick. He was just letting it fly. Yep. Very, very, very emotional speech. Probably the best speech I've ever seen. And speaking of that, Dick Vitale announced today he has throat cancer again.
Yeah.
6 weeks of chemo. You know, if you're a college basketball guy, he is one of those names, one of those figures. He's just bigger than life in the college basketball world, Kev.
Yeah, I read that about Dickie V. I felt so bad for him because he's been through how many rounds of cancer in the last 4 or 5 years?
Exactly.
And like you said, you know, if you're a basketball fan, yeah, there are times that maybe Dickie V can annoy you when he gets on to Duke too much or something. But
my wife hates him with a passion. She hears his voice. She cringes, my wife.
But if you're a basketball fan, if you're a junkie, you got to love Dickie V.
Agreed.
And, you know, our best to him.
Absolutely.
To him. But like you said, with the ESPYs, you know, a couple of years ago when they started, you know, getting a little too political, that's when I started to just turn it off. I just couldn't care less anymore.
Yeah, I never was an award show guy in any facet. You know, I'm not, even though I'm in the radio business, I don't watch the Grammys much. I don't watch the Oscars, you know. Sadly, the one I watch the most is the Tonys because my daughter is addicted to it and we repeat it over and over. And it's something I never watched ever. And then all of a sudden, now we watch the Tony Awards. It's the only thing on tonight. All the athletes are there and stuff like that. But once again, just ESPN has turned their tables, and we're just both old school. We just want to talk about sports. We don't really care about the rest of it. I don't care if you're left, right, east, west, north, south, male, female, trans, whatever. I just want to talk sports, and I think it gets beyond that sometimes, but that's just my take. But, we're midway through the baseball season, as you said. And let's talk
some Yankees. At least let's get the better team in New York.
Well, listen, 49-42, 8 games back, 1 game out of the wild card. I'm going to start off with the most negative thing I can say. The Yankees have a patch of star insurance going on the uniform. I am livid. They're ruining the pinstripes for, I think it's $20 million. There's nothing sacred. It's the Yankee uniform. I hate it. I know it's part of business. I get it. It's not long before a team's nickname is going to be named after their biggest sponsor, you know? I mean, and they're going to change things around. It's going to be like, you know, European
Chico's
soccer.
Bail bonds.
Yeah, it's going to be European soccer in 5 minutes. The outfield wall is going to look like a minor league game. But that's what they're doing. It bothered me to see it on the Mets, and it certainly bothers me to see it on the Yankees. So here's what the Yankees are looking at. I'm sorry, what kept?
Just on that. You know, I was reading some. Oh, this never would have happened if Steinbrenner were still owner. The George, I mean, you know, it's like, I think George would have sold out for the money. He was about making money. He was a businessman.
Well, here's the thing, and I heard an argument today. I don't disagree with you. So if we're going to sit there and start doing that and tainting the uniform a little bit, then can the Yankees start recruiting guys that allow them to have long hair or facial hair?
Yeah, I mean, that's ridiculous.
I didn't think of it myself, but I heard somebody discussing it, and it's a legitimate thing. If there's going to be changes, you know, to the way the Yankees do things, yeah, it's an interesting point. Anyway, so we get into the Yanks. Okay, they come off the break. They go to Colorado and Anaheim before they come home for Kansas City and the Mets, and then they head to Baltimore. So the first four series are all against teams that they can legitimately beat, and they have to do that. They're a game out of the wild card. This is the time of the part of the schedule that's important for them to really turn some heads and even do some damage in Baltimore if they can. They won the first two last week and then lost the back end of the four-game set. This team does not hit without Judge in the lineup. Rizzo leads the way at 257. 257 is the best hitter on this team if you take Judge out because he doesn't have enough at-bats. Bader, kind of Falefa, and Torres are the only other guys hitting over 250. Volpe, interestingly enough, has the second-best war on this team. You want to laugh your butt off.
Judge. He should be in the minors, shouldn't he?
Where's Gino? I mean, listen, he's only hitting 216, but on this team, it's considered pretty good.
He's far from your biggest problem on that team.
He is. I mean, listen, I understand the idea of it, but there's nowhere else to go with it. You know, he got his average up to 224 at one point. He went up 30 points. He dropped back another 8. Let's see what happens. If he goes through another massive slump, I get it, but hopefully he stays up. And you want to see Peraza come up. Couple interesting things about this team. Judge still leads the team in homers despite missing 32 games, and he leads by 6. He's got 19. You know, Torres and Volpe have 13. Rizzo has 11. The offense sucks without Judge. Donaldson's hitting 152.
Not only the home runs, he also still leads in RBIs.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that's even more impressive than the home runs.
Oh, it is. I mean, but it's just like, but the home run lead is by 6 homers.
Yeah.
I mean, he's leading it by 33%, a little over the next guy.
These are the Bronx Bombers. What happened?
Oh, my God. Donaldson still hitting 152, 15 total hits, 10 of them are homers, one double. Stanton hitting 203. I mean, they're just horrible. Pitching has actually kept them alive. Not that the pitching has been great, but Cole has been very good. Okay, he hasn't been great, but he's been very good. Obviously, Herman has the perfect game to his record and still an ERA over 4. Clark Schmidt, who I've been beating up all year, has suddenly found the groove a little bit. He's been a little bit better. Severino's been awful, but that's the way it is. And out of the pen, it's really been Clay Holmes being the best guy out there with, Abreu okay, Marinaccio okay. That's it. The thing about this team, Cortez is tied for second in wins on this team behind Cole, and he's missed at least 7 starts. I mean, they just don't get any consistency out of anybody. When you watch this team, nothing inspires you. When Judge is not in the lineup, there's nothing to watch for. That's why I like watching Volpe, because there's nobody else. It's just not a very, very good team. They're still in contention, and if they go out there and make the trade for another reliever and an outfielder, they'll be right there. Unlike the Mets, who we'll talk about next, I pin a lot of this on Cashman. I don't pin a lot of the Mets' problems on their front office, but I do pin a lot of the Yankees on theirs. Because when you looked at it, I mean, Judge was Judge. You had to sign him, all that type of stuff. I get it. Bader's had a history of being injured, okay? Torres coming off a bad year last year. LeMahieu hasn't been good in a couple of years. You're banking on a rookie shortstop. You're putting a lot of pressure on. Rizzo's been okay. I mean, that's what Rizzo is. What we see is what we get. You know, you're expecting Trevino to have another miraculous first half or whatever he did like last year. There's so many holes on this team, and he didn't even get a closer. So, you know, you don't have to pin him down because he went out and got Rodon and say, okay, but he was trying to do starting, getting the starters together. And Rodon looked good in his first start. He didn't look bad anyway. He didn't win, but he wasn't awful. But he did nothing to address the lineup. And without judging it, it's so exploited. It's ridiculous. Stanton is a shell of himself. You know, it's a very I don't know. It's been a very disappointing first half, and this is the better team of the New York teams right now.
I look as a Mets fan, and I say the Yankees, like I said, without Judge, that lineup is very poor. Without taking away Cole, that rest of the pitching staff is how are they keeping them in games? But somehow, some way, this team is still only a game out of the wild card.
Yep, and only eight games out of first, despite how great Tampa has been.
I mean, they've been lucky that Tampa decided to lose seven in a row.
Basically, Tampa let everybody back into it, but they're only five behind Baltimore, who's also had a great start this year. I mean, the Yankees could legitimately finish as the top wild card in this. They're not that far out of it.
Baltimore, like you said, they've got five games behind
Lead over the Yanks.
Yeah.
Or six game over the Yanks, five games over.
That's right. Yeah.
Over the other two teams ahead, Toronto and
Houston are the wild cards right now.
Yep, Houston. I couldn't think.
But I think Houston will probably. I think they're going to catch Texas.
Well, Texas has slumped down the stretch here a little bit too.
They've slumped. You know, we'll just stick with the American League for a couple of minutes too, while we're talking Yankees.
That's fine.
To me, you know, the loss of DeGrom, even though I think every Mets fan would tell you it was to be expected at some point, Texas does not have an ace, a stopper. They've got some good pitching depth, but they don't have that ace who can go out there and shut down a losing streak.
Evaldi's a nice pitcher. He's not an ace.
And, you know, the bullpen's been pretty good so far. They've beaten the teams to death with that lineup. They've been hitting all year. If they can hang on to their pitching at all, they're going to have to go out and get another starter, I think.
Yes.
Even an inning eater guy, you know, it doesn't have to be the top of the rotation, I think, but they do need another, you know, good solid three starter just to give them that pitching depth. And I think they'd be able to hold on, at least make the playoffs. And from there, you never know. But like I said, I don't think they're going to hold off Houston. Seattle, they've been playing a little bit better lately, get back over 500, but they've been a little disappointing this year, I think.
Yeah, they were going to build off of what they did in that Toronto series last year after winning the first round of that playoff. You thought, oh, wow, Julio Rodriguez, all this stuff. You thought all these great things, and just hasn't happened.
Yep. And the Angels, unfortunately, once Trout went down, they've lost five in a row. They've 9 out of 10. So the question is going to be, are they going to trade Shohei and see what they get for him, or are they going to keep him and hope to re-sign him?
Well, the question is, I mean, how much are you willing to give up for a rental?
If I'm the Mets, I'm not willing to give up enough. It's got to be one of these other teams.
If I'm the Yankees, I'm not doing it because I'm not trading Volpe and Peraza and a couple. I'm not for a guy that may just be a rental. Looks like Panama might have just scored and they're calling it offside. So hopefully that's correct. And we'll see what happens. This would be the second goal by Panama.
Yeah, for a change, you're ahead of me for a change. It looked like it was clearly offside.
Yeah,
I'm sure they'll look at VAR, but my first glance is I'm behind you. I just saw it live.
There was three guys offside. It could have been any one of them that would have touched it. Looks like they were
one,
offside.
Two. They're coming back here. Yeah, still clearly three guys offside.
Three guys. Any one of those guys would have touched it. It would have been no goal. Yep. But anyway, sorry about that. Didn't mean to interrupt your baseball analysis there.
Nope, that's fine. Central.
Whoever wins that division gets through. It's either going to be I think it comes down to Cleveland and Minnesota, unless Chicago makes some amazing run out there.
Yeah.
They have the talent. You just don't expect it right now. They're just not playing well.
And looking at our picks from preseason, I just happened to go back and listen to the podcast just to write them down a bit here. All three of us had the Astros winning. I think that's going to happen. All three of us had the Rangers in the wild card. Gino and I both had the Mariners. I think we both expected them off of last year. They're only four back. You know, there's still time for them to make a run here. The Central, we were totally different on the Central. You had the Twins. Gino had the White Sox. I had the Guardians.
So I think it's going to come down to you or I unless Gino's team makes a run.
Yep. And in the East, Gino and I had the Yankees. You had the Blue Jays. Nobody saw Tampa. I think, you know, even you were saying that this didn't seem to be as strong a Tampa team as we've seen in the past.
I was so correct.
And we thought Baltimore was a year away.
And they're certainly not. Well, they've gotten the pitching early. We thought the hitting would be there. I didn't think the pitching would be there. And it clearly has been. And, you know, that's how the American League is breaking out. Tell us about the Mets, Kev.
Oh, what a team. They've had, you know, you've heard me rant and rave all year about the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the loss of Diaz hurt. You know, you still felt like they had a little bit of a back end. And here's where I'll blame Epler is, you know, those, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh relievers. In the offseason, Epler made a big deal about making sure you keep guys with options because we need to send guys up and down as, you know, the season goes through. And rather than bringing in short guys, you know, Andrew Chafin was out there, for example. Mm-hmm. Rather than bringing in that type of reliever, we're going with Jeff Brigham and Leon and, you know, any other stiff that's out there. And it's just been painful to watch. I think Buck has been a little careful sometimes. You know, when you're not playing well and you have a winnable game, sometimes you got to push, you know, Robertson for an extra game. You know, even though you may not want to use them. You know, I think there were a couple of games where maybe he should have used them to get the win. Don't worry about tomorrow so much when you have a chance, when you need to stop the lead in there.
Yeah, when you're below 500, you don't play that way.
The rotation, you know, fortunately, Scherzer and Verlander have not pitched to where we thought. In fact, I think Scherzer was going to win the Cy Young, according to you and Jalen.
I had him.
That's not looking too good. Of course, Quintana's been out all year. Senga has been the big, I don't know if surprise is the right word, but, you know, we were hoping that he would do this, and I think he's met, you know, reasonable expectations. He's been solid.
Yeah, I agree.
A clunker here or there, but that's to be expected. But I think he's been consistently good. And then, you know, you get to the backhand. Carrasco's been awful. Peterson, you know, since coming back up, he's thrown three decent games, I guess. But before that, he was terrible. McGill has been bad. It's just been, you know, pitching wise, it's just been tough to watch him all year. And then offensively, you know, I've been on it all year about the fact that so far I think only Brandon Nimmo has been the guy who's been near his career averages. You know, between batting average, on base, slugging. Alonso and Lindor have the power numbers. They have the RBI totals, but you can't have them hitting 210, 220.
Agreed.
We thought also in the preseason that Marte was a key guy. He looks like he's still recovering from that offseason, that core muscle surgery. I don't think he's fully healthy. He hasn't looked healthy most of the year. The only thing he's been able to do, again, I think part of it with the new rules, with the pickoff rules, with the bigger bases, he has been able to steal.
He's got about 23, you know, right?
Yeah. But he's been hitting, you know, mid-250s, not really driving the ball. McNeil's, you know, 250 slap hitter right now.
Yep.
Left field, you know, Tommy Pham has taken over the left field job somehow, some way, but he's been hitting the ball hard consistently.
And then he got banged up.
And then, you know, the little groin issue that, you know, we'll see what he looks like. The positives, I think, have been the two kids. Beatty came up playing well, slumped a little bit, but you take a look, you know, in the last 3 or 4 weeks, his average has been up over 300 in that time frame, and I think he's sort of starting to make the adjustments back, and hopefully he can finish with a good second half. And we've seen Alvarez, who also went through a bit of a slump, and all of a sudden, the last 2 weeks, he's just been hitting home run after home run. And just looking like, you know, if things go well, he should be the catcher for, you know, you're hoping 10 to 15 years at least.
Listen, he's looked really good. Big problem with the Mets is if I would have told you at the break they'd be 18 and a half out of first with a 300 and whatever million payroll, you would have laughed.
And so for sure. We all had the Braves win the division, but we all thought the Mets would battle them right down to the end and definitely be the wild card.
Instead, it's Florida that's been the most competitive team in that division for the Braves. The Mets are still 7 out of the wild card. They need to pass 5 teams. 7 games isn't insurmountable, just the amount of teams you have to pass. that you have to worry about.
But I think for them, you know, the next 2 weeks are telling. They need to put together a run.
Yeah, they got the Dodgers and the White Sox at home. Then they head to Boston and the Yankees.
And then, so they do have a couple of, boy, the Dodgers are a tough series there.
The Dodgers and then the White Sox at home.
Yeah.
You White Sox. Six of these games, you got to find a way to go 4-2 here.
Yep. The White Sox, you think, you know, looking at the way they've played, you would hope that you can beat them. Yankees and Red Sox, even though they finish, they bring up the rear in the AL East. They're both, you know, we talked about the Yankees being a game back. The Red Sox are a game back of the Yankees.
Yep.
Somehow the Red Sox are only two back of the wild card. So, tough stretch. I think the solution has got to be from the team. I don't think there's anybody worth going out to get at this point. But at the same time, if, you know, the next 2 weeks they don't make any move, a lot of Met fans, you know, want sell. Well, what are you going to sell on this team if you look ahead to next year too? You've got Robertson, who is very valuable, I think, as a trade commodity. Everybody's looking for a reliever, especially a guy who can't close, but definitely a setup guy.
Raley's also a commodity because he's a lefty.
He's a lefty. Everybody's looking for a lefty. Fan could maybe bring you back a C-level prospect. You know, he's on a one-year deal. He's playing well as long as he's healthy. But if I say, oh, we got to trade Scherzer, we got to trade Verlander.
Nobody wants these guys with those contracts for that money. You might be able to get something for McNeil. Not a lot, but something if you want to bring Mauricio up.
I think you're trading very low on McNeil, unfortunately.
Oh, you're trading him extremely low. You're trading him extremely low.
I mean,
you don't want to trade any of the kids, so you want to keep them all here. Unless for some reason you really think very highly of dealing Vientos. That's it.
Yeah.
Well, trade. The other three you can't touch.
With Vientos, you know, he came up for a month and had about 11 starts. Yeah. And Vientos looks like a kid with, you know, a big enough swing that has holes in it, but he's going to have to play close to every day to keep a rhythm going.
Agreed.
And what did Buck do? Oh, we got to play Vogi. Vogi has to DH, you know, with his 218 average. Silly.
It's just silly a little bit the way that they play it. I am, once again, you know, I haven't loved the way Buck has done it, but I can't blame Buck too much. This one's more on the players.
Oh, definitely.
This one is much more on the players than the Yankees. I think the Yankees, I blame more on the front office than I do the Mets. If Epler doesn't build a bullpen next year, then we know Epler can't do this job.
Right.
Because when you have that kind of payroll and you have nobody coming out of that pen outside of Robertson and Raley, then there's something wrong. I mean, Adovino's okay. If he was pitching sixth and seventh only, you would be okay with him. But the fact that he has to pitch in the eighth makes him tough.
Yeah.
You want to situationally put him in against three righties in the sixth or seventh. That's what you want. You don't want him in a big spot in the eighth because if they pinch hit and they're putting lefties up there, he becomes less effective. How about that?
Yeah. I mean, looking before the season, you know, when Diaz locked down in the ninth, Robertson's got locked down in the eighth. Then you've got, you know, your Adovino-Raley combination, lefty-righty, depending on who's up for your sixth and seventh inning, you thought you had built, you know, at least the back end.
Yeah.
Drew Smith has been a disappointment as well. You keep, you know, I'm sure every Met fan's like me, they keep waiting for Drew Smith to finally put it together, and he just refuses to.
No, I get it. I mean, the thing about this team is that it's time for them to play to the back of the baseball cards, especially the two ace pitchers. You need to get Verlander and you need to get Scherzer. They need to do well. They need to start. They need to carry this team home. They're good enough to do so.
Exactly.
And if they find a way to do it, the Mets could find themselves at least toying with that wild card.
Right.
And if they get into a short series with the starting pitchers, they could compete with anybody. You know?
Yep. So, looking at the rest of the National League, The Braves are on a 109 win pace.
They're very good.
And I think that's even with some pitching injuries. That lineup is just scary. We mentioned it last week when we were looking at some of the awards. Acuna with 21 home runs, 41 steals, 337 average. He's playing at some MVP level there. Just a deep, deep, deep lineup.
Absolutely.
Miami's been a surprise. You mentioned them before. Even though they've been outscored this year, they are still three games up in the wild card, only 8.5 behind Atlanta, playing at a 93 win pace. And this is without Sandy Alcantara pitching well at all.
Very true.
Philly's there in the middle. I think Philly's got the talent to still make a move here. They're only half a game back of the wild card, so they're right in the mix. Surprisingly, the last wild card spot right now is San Fran, who, when we did the preview, they were opened up. I think they opened up against the Mets, if I remember right. And yep, they did not look like a good team.
They did not. I actually thought that they were going to fall apart this year. I picked them as a heavy under.
And yeah, there they are sitting there at 49 and 41.
As you sit there and look at the team and don't see the talent necessarily in the lineup.
Nope.
But they find a way.
And then we all had the Dodgers.
And the Padres.
And the Padres. Well, we were right on the one, wrong on the other. Gino was very high on Arizona this year. He had them as a wild card team. He had them well over the 74.5. So he was all in on Arizona.
Yep.
Kudos to him for picking them. In the Central, let's see, listening back on your comments, boy, this Reds team is going to be a fun team to watch. We're just not expecting them to win yet.
Yeah, and I was wrong.
They are a fun team to watch. And somehow, despite a terrible team ERA, and I think we talked about it a couple weeks ago, the Reds were not expecting this. They did not have the pitching lined up yet to be a force. But with De La Cruz, with Steer, with McLean, India, this is some lineup. And that's not even counting, you know, Joey Votto being back. And they're if they can keep this up, they are the most fun team to look forward to coming to the playoffs.
Listen, I just hope that they win that division. I want to see them in the playoffs.
So do I.
Listen, I mean, that's just De La Cruz is just one of the funnest guys that I've seen play baseball in a long time.
Yep. And the rest of the division,
yep.
You know, Milwaukee hasn't been all that great this year. They're still in it. They're still about half a game out of the wild card as well. The Cubbies, I was a little higher on them than Gino. They're right at their projection of about 76 wins. That's their pace. Pittsburgh got off to the good start. They've slumped badly. And probably the third biggest disappointment probably in baseball is the St. Louis Cardinals.
They've been awful.
They're on pace to win 68 games.
It's hard to imagine because it's not like Arenado and Goldschmidt have been horrible.
No.
They're just not getting anything from anybody else. And the thing about them is, I thought that they had the most talented division by far. I thought Milwaukee would be competitive with them. Pittsburgh has impressed me simply because they lost O'Neill Cruz, who was their version of De La Cruz.
Yep.
A guy that can hit lasers and run around the bases and do all these things. And they got off really quick. But now that they've fallen back out of it a little bit, I mean, that's the move I want to see the Yankees make. I want Bednar.
Yeah.
I want a ninth inning guy. But, that Central has been really – the Cubs have been disappointing. I expected the Cubs to be better also. But the Cardinals have been really disappointing. Just the way it's gone the first half. There's still 70 games to go for a lot of these teams. So things can change. Simple, 8-game winning streak for a team, and all of a sudden their fortunes look completely different. And right, the Mets have the capabilities offensively and pitching-wise to do that, as do the Padres, as do the Cardinals. So, I mean, those are all three teams that have been disappointments. That, you know, we didn't have all three of them winning their divisions, but because we all had the Braves, but a lot of people did have all three of those teams winning divisions.
We had the Braves. We had the Padres. You guys had the Cardinals. I had the Cubs.
Yep. We're nowhere close on that one. Yep. So work to do on that. None of us had the Marlins making a run for the playoffs. So
nope.
So what we'll see again, 70 games to go. Let's see what we can, let's see what can happen. Any other baseball points before we move on?
I think we've talked plenty of baseball.
We certainly have. Just before we move on, just a quick MLB draft.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Pirates, the number one pick, Paul Skenes out of LSU, considered a generational talent on the mound, 6'6". Average fastball this year was 98.5. He's a horse. If you watched him at all in the SEC or watched him at all during the College World Series, the Super Regionals, anything, he's basically unhittable against some very good batters with aluminum bats. Now, we don't know how it's going to translate, but the Pirates might have gotten exactly what they need here at Skenes. Second pick to Washington was Dylan Cruz. First time the two players were taken back-to-back to start a draft from the same team. They're both LSU guys. You could easily tell how they won the College World Series this year.
Yeah.
The Yanks took a kid named George Lombard, 6'3", 190-pound shortstop from a high school out of Florida. He went 26. The Mets went an inch shorter, but they did the same thing at 32. They took Colin Houck, a 6'2", 190-pound shortstop out of Georgia. So the high school kids, you know, you're waiting at least 3 or 4 years before you know anything about them if they move up along the way. But everything I heard, this was supposedly the deepest Major League Baseball draft in years. So a lot of talent here, lots of things going on. Unfortunately, Panama just took a lead here in the extra session here. So we'll see what happens. And we'll talk a little Gold Cup in a little bit. But this is supposedly the deepest Major League Baseball draft that we've had in a while. And since I know so little about the NBA draft compared to what I used to, I know about as much about the MLB draft as I do the except it goes on for days. You know, yep. A little bit different.
20 rounds and 614 players picked.
Yep, pretty much. Pretty much. Kev, any points on that, or where do you want to go next, bud?
Nope. Well, let's do Gold Cup since you mentioned it.
All right. Lead the way, bud.
So tonight we're in the Gold Cup semifinals. As we speak, Panama, like I said, just took the 1-0 lead. Was he onside?
I believe he was.
He was? Okay.
I believe he was. I haven't seen anything to contradict it. Just a bad misplay by Miazga, who really shouldn't be out there, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
The thing about this is, again, this is a young team out there. This is not the regulars. These are not the guys. You know, so Walker Zimmerman, who would be our best defensive midfield, middle back, is not playing. I think Miles Robinson's probably our second best, so he would be out there. You see the things with Long and Miazga where there's some things to question. You know, it's a very, very young squad, to say the least.
But I think despite the age, you know, they're getting some great experience here. And I've been impressed. A couple of guys I've thought have stood out. Christian Roldan. Brandon Vasquez, who scored the goal against Canada that gave them the 1-0 lead early. Or not early, but late. Buzio.
Yeah, Buzio in the middle.
Very good in the middle. Of course, Jesus Ferreira had the two hat tricks in the earlier rounds, back-to-back games. And Kate Cowell, I thought, has been nice job off the bench, mostly. He didn't know he started tonight.
Yeah, he started tonight. You know, guys that have stood out to me, I think Miles Robinson coming back with injuries looked pretty good, actually, overall. I also think Reynolds has looked pretty good out there as one of the fullbacks. I thought he's been pretty good as well. Those guys have stood out to me. They're all young. Really, on this team, you know, the couple of guys will make this squad, but, you know, there's no Pulisic, there's no Weah, there's no McKennie, there's no Dest, there's no Zimmerman. You know, Turner's the starter, and he's been good, but there's no, a lot of these guys that would normally be our regular players, Areola, a lot of these guys that we'd normally see a lot of, Sargent, We're not seeing those guys right now. DK, yep. You know, a bunch of guys. But it's good to see these young kids getting the opportunity. They have only lost the panel once on U.S. soil, I believe. And it looks like it's going to be it looks like it could be twice. But they did come back against Canada in the quarters in a game that they dominated. This game, Panama's been the better squad. They've controlled the play a little bit more. They've had some really good chances. You know, against Canada, the U.S. dominated. They just a little unlucky in some spots, I think.
Canada, I put it on at halftime, and I saw the second half. Like I said, the U.S. really played a very good second half. They got the lead in the 88th minute, and then in added time, just an unlucky bounce off a hand in the box, the penalty shot, which was a goal. Canada did take the lead on their only shot on goal, other than the penalty shot, in the entire game. But then Turner had the beautiful feed. He actually came up on the free kick. Mm-hmm. And served the ball in the box, and off a deflection, it went in. As technically, it's an own goal by Canada. And then Turner came up big, saved the first two PK.
First time in Gold Cup history, a goalie saved the first two.
Really? I didn't know that.
I didn't know that till today.
I learned something new tonight. So, 20 minutes left, 15 minutes. About 20 minutes left in the game.
We'll see what the kids can do. They're going to press. We'll see what happens. Ferreira, if he wants to be that eventual closer on this team, that the nine spot, the guy that's the striker, he's got to have to put a goal in against a good team. You know, it can't just be against the St. Kitts Nevises of the world. You got to put a goal in against a quality opponent. And Panama would qualify for that.
And later tonight, it'll be Jamaica and Mexico.
Yeah, I'll be rooting for the reggae boys. Why not?
So will I. All right, that's our soccer knowledge. And I think, you know, I know for me, you know, I think Ted Lasso, I said it before, I think Ted Lasso sort of sparked an interest in international soccer competitions, as funny as it may sound.
I always had somewhat of an interest in the major tournaments when it's national. I never was in the team stuff. So I didn't watch UEFA as much as I watch UEFA Nations much more than I'll watch the UEFA teams. That's just me. But, you know, I root for countries, root against other countries. That's just the way I do it. But I get it. Ted Lasso is great. Great show. Yep. You know, we'll see what happens. They say it's over. Then you hear things about that show being resurrected, but without Ted, which seems weird. So I don't know what you'd call it. The Lasso Way.
The Lasso Way. There you go.
You call it the Lasso Way, or you could call it, you know, you just name it after the team. But either way, whatever. We'll see what happens. But the U.S. has been, you know, in a couple of exciting games, and let's see if they can tie it up here tonight.
Yep.
Kev, anything on the Jets getting the Hard Knocks nod?
We mentioned it. I think Gino was one of the first ones brought it up to us. I hated it then. I hate the thought of it now.
1-1. U.S. just tied it up. Ferreira just scored.
Have they?
I believe they have. I don't think
he's still passing it around. It's being served in. Ferreira goal. Okay.
Yeah, I don't see any way that's an offside.
No.
That's legit. So we're back to 1-1. And he had the big goal. Like Ferreira had it 2 minutes ago. He has to have one against a good team, and he just did.
There you go.
Great header by Mihaljevic, and then a perfect upper corner, nothing the goalie could do.
Darren De Prima, Nostradamus.
Oh, yeah, right. So we get back to the Hard Knocks thing. I'll watch it because it's my team. Yeah. I hate the distraction for this team because there's so many changes on it, just with the way that we're looking. The expectations have changed more than the players.
Yep.
You figure
it's one player that's making the expectations. We know that.
Well, but the thing is that, you know, he's one of the greatest of all time. You know what I mean? It's not like we don't have somebody that's coming in. We're hoping that it was all injury last year that had him slumping a little bit. I know a lot of people are whining about the fact that we have no proven backup. You know what? Listen, Zach Wilson played enough starts last year to be considered a proven backup right now. He's better than most of the backups in the league. He's not awful. He's not horrible. He wasn't horrendous. He lost a little confidence. But let's be honest. He did not have, the best line all season. A lot of injuries up front.
Yep.
Before we start killing, I mean, I still want to find, I still want to make sure we have five good offensive linemen. I'd love Dalvin Cook. We seem to be the favorite for right now. I told you guys that a few weeks ago. That'd be nice if he came in.
Yeah. Some protection in case Holden takes a little time getting back from the ACL.
Exactly.
Especially with that. You feel like we're a little deeper the wide receiver spot?
Absolutely.
With Lazard and Hardman to go along with Garrett Wilson. So
the defensive line is got more depth than any defensive line in the NFL, I think.
I think we rotate 20 guys through on the defensive line.
And if they do resign Quan Alexander, the linebacker depth stays the same, which is good.
Yep, we need to get.
I don't know if we have a free safety. I don't know if we have a true free safety. I mean, they seem to like Adams. We'll see.
The key will be getting Quinnen re-signed, getting him in camp, getting him happy.
Well, it's going to happen as soon as they restructure Rodgers' contract. Then they'll bring in Quinnen. Hopefully, they both happen before before camp starts. We'll see.
And everybody's going to go back to Favre being here for 1 year. And a couple of differences. I remember Favre got off to a very good start with the Jets.
He was excellent.
They were looking real good. Then he hurt the elbow he hurt.
Yeah,
in about week 12. Yep. And they fell apart and finished 9-7.
I don't remember who they made the 9-7. I really didn't remember.
But the difference to me is the Favre trade happened in the middle of preseason.
Yep.
Rodgers has been here. We've known that he's been here since offseason started. Everything he said prior to coming to the Jets, everything he's done since coming to the Jets makes it look like he wants to be in the Jets. I don't think Favre necessarily wanted to be at the Jets.
He just wanted to keep playing.
He wanted to keep playing. He wanted Minnesota. There's no way the Packers are going to let him go to Minnesota.
Yep.
Well, I think Rodgers, if he has a good enough year this year, I think he'll stick around for at least one more year.
If we get 2 years out of him, I'm excited. If
I'd
we get
thrilled.
One, I'll be disappointed. Two, I'll be happy. I mean, it's just like it's that close a thing. I mean, and I want it to be an uninjured year this year because the talent around him is pretty good. You feel like, especially if Hall comes back and if we do sign Cook, it will be a really nice combination in the backfield. The Garrett Wilson, I believe, is going to be a star. And with a guy like Rodgers throwing him the ball, it's going to only make him better. Lazard and Corey Davis are the same guy. I'm surprised we have both. I feel like one of them should go, but whatever. I mean, that's the biggest problem I have.
Davis might be around until maybe some team gets hit with some injuries at wide receiver. Maybe you can flip him for a seventh-round pick rather than just cutting him.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, actually. I don't disagree with you on that at all. But, we'll get much more into football as training camps start and we see what's going on. And, obviously, we'll talk about Hard Knocks as the year goes on through.
Yep.
We'll see what happens there. Kev, any thoughts on Wimbledon as we get down to the final eight players left in the singles draw?
The men's have been pretty much the form here.
Yep.
The semifinal matchups, we've got the number one Alcaraz versus the number three Medvedev. Medvedev took care of Eubanks today in five sets. I saw
great
Eubanks.
Performance by Chris Eubanks, though. He got to the quarters. Great job.
He got up two sets to one, lost the fourth set in the tiebreak, and then just ran out of gas in the fifth set.
Yeah, just a few too many double faults, and he had 10-5. Did not do great on a second serve. Only won 51% of those points. That was the key for Eubanks. When he got his first serve in, he was dangerous.
But I think with Eubanks, he had the five setter against Tsitsipas in the round before. He was a five seed. The match before that, he beat O'Connell in straight sets, but they were all in tie breaks. So
I mean, that's the thing. That's the thing with the men's draw now. It's a lot of hard serving.
Yep.
And it's impossible to find any kind of match that doesn't have two lopsided players against each other, where at least two of the sets don't go to the tiebreak.
Yeah. And then on the other side of the bracket, as expected, Djokovic got through, looking for his fifth straight Wimbledon.
Yep.
And would be number eight overall. which would tie Federer.
Yep.
He'll be taking on the 8th seed Sinner from Italy.
Yep. Very Italian last name.
Yeah.
But if you look at him, he's clearly from the north.
But that was the only even mild upset. You know, Rude got knocked off early in the tournament. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've got 1, 2, 3, and 8. Definitely pretty much the form.
No doubt.
And the question will be, can Joker win these next two matches and come to the U.S. Open in September looking for the calendar year Grand Slam?
Yeah, and that's what we're all looking for. And also, if he wins this, he'll be looking to set the overall record of all time, male or female, if he does win, if he wins this one, if he wins the U.S. Open as well. Because he's one behind right now. He would tie it, I believe.
I think it was Margaret Court.
Yep.
That's 24.
Yeah, he would tie Court, right? And then he would have a chance to beat her if he happened to win. Sinner's a good player. It'll be a good match. You know, obviously Medvedev's a good player as well. Yep. Just it's hard to imagine Djokovic losing, to be honest with you. He's that dominant.
Especially on grass.
Exactly. And I think Eubanks' game is going to look very good on that U.S. Open hard court. So we'll see how it comes across.
I was excited.
That power game.
Yeah, I saw him a little bit, and, you know, tall, lanky. I thought kid, and then you start reading about him, he's 27 years old.
And we just hadn't seen him, but he's starting to find his way, which is pretty good. You know, I mean, there are other Americans that are seated higher, but, you know, kid got it done. So, impressive. Any other points on Wimbledon? Oh, well, the women's side, you got Sabalenka is the highest seed. She plays Jabeur, the 2 versus 6.
Right.
And then you have one unseeded players in Svitolina and Vondrousova. So, I mean, Sabalenka is clearly the best player left. You know, she was in trouble in an early round. She found a way to come back off of it. You know, I'd be stunned if she doesn't come through, to be honest with you.
I think the interesting one is Svitolina. She's a Ukrainian player. She was actually highly ranked a couple of years ago. Had a couple of injuries, missed a couple of seasons recovering. She took out Swiatek, who was the 1 seed in the quarters. The fourth round was the interesting matchup. She took on Victoria Azarenka from Belarus. Took her out 11-9 in the third set tiebreak.
Azarenka seems like she's been around forever.
Yep. And post-match with the world issues between Russia and Belarus and the Ukraine, Svitolina has publicly said she will not shake a hand of a Russian or Belarusian player. And so the match was over. Azarenka said she respected her decision. She walked to her chair. Svitolina walked to her chair, and the crowd booed Azarenka because they thought she was being a sore loser.
No, she was. Azarenka's been around for a long time. And she's always been a classy player. There's no way to do that.
Yeah. And like I said, she respected Svitolina's request, and she didn't want to show her up by standing at the net waiting for a handshake that never came.
Yeah. And the British crowd was not aware of the
They were not aware of the little details like that.
Exactly.
Did you catch
any of the OGPA, by the way? Did you catch anything at Pebble?
Oh. And my funniest line was, you know, everybody tells everybody to be quiet. Well, at Wimbledon, apparently, they ask you to not pop the champagne bottles while players are in the middle of their serve.
Ridiculous. Not easy. Yep. I remember being a kid when they used to promote breakfast at Wimbledon. And I was like, what does that mean? I guess that means they can eat breakfast at home. I had no idea. I was a little kid.
We can eat breakfast. We can watch McEnroe and Connors every year.
And just before, not to get into a complete political issue, but are you going to be okay that Megan Rapinoe is retiring?
My heart's broken. She's doing it so that the focus can be on the women in their World Cup quest. She didn't want all the questions leading into the World Cup about what she's going to be doing after the World Cup because she is 38. It's like, I'm done with her.
Hey, listen, she's been a fine player. I just don't like people that represent the country that don't really like the country.
Yep.
And, you know, when she lets the flag drop on the floor, that's, to me, don't represent the country if you don't feel that way. I mean, listen, everyone's allowed their own views here. You know, there's nothing stopping it. But why would you want to represent a country if you don't really like it?
Yeah.
I just don't understand it. I'm not saying that politically she can view whatever she wants, you know, but, you know, interesting. She caused a little bit of a stir with the whole transgender women are the same as natural women. And Martina went back with the yikes response. So obviously a little bit of discord amongst a couple of great female athletes of all time.
Martina, of course, very big into the, I'm going to separate it out here, very big into the LGB rights.
Yep, absolutely.
So she was one of the first really big superstars that I remember outwardly, you know, being the lesbian.
Yep.
And, hey, great for her. She can find love that way.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Very happy for you. But I think her point, and you know, without getting too political here, I agree with her point, the fact that, you know, biological women should be playing against biological women.
It's just a little unfair, and women's rights in Title IX gets hurt when women lose scholarships to biological men. It's just the way it is. But anyway, before we get too political on this one, did you catch anything at Pebble?
No.
I caught a decent amount. The coolest thing was on Thursday and Friday that they had Sorenstam and we playing together. Neither had a really good round. They both finished, I think, plus 12 when it was all said and done and didn't qualify. But, you know, it was nice to see both of them playing together. Allison Corpus wins her first tournament ever, first American in 7 years, and it was her first LPGA win. Only player on the par all four rounds. The only reason I get captivated by it is because we talked about it a couple of weeks ago when the men played their U.S. Open out in L.A., how the course didn't have anything magical. Anytime they're playing Pebble Beach, I just love watching tournaments at that course. I just love I just love everything about Pebble Beach. So I catch myself watching it a little bit. Not that I watched it a ton, but I watched enough to see some interesting things that the course did to the players, and I just thought it was fun. But again, congratulations to Allison Corpus, first win.
Yeah, I think the big problem is that there is a lack of marketable players right now on the LPGA Tour.
The problem is that it's a very Asian tour right now. I'm not trying to say that that's a bad thing. But it's not an American Asian tour. It's not Asian American. I should say. I said it backwards. It's more of the dominant players, much like tennis. What we're talking about, where players are not Americans that are doing well. And therefore, it becomes very tough to market. Now, this girl's Hawaiian, that one. Second Hawaiian ever besides Michelle Wee. You know, so it's interesting. And it was the biggest purse ever, $2 million. So, you know, stuff's happening. It's nice to see them playing big courses like that, though. I thought it was pretty cool.
And you've got different nationalities here. But, you know, when you've got the leaderboard with a lot of last names are the same. Kim, Shin, Ryu, Lee, Park. This is not a racial thing. I'm not making a racial thing. It's very hard for somebody to stick out and be above everybody else when it seems like so much of the field shares common names.
Yeah, it's a silly thing, but you need the quarter to come out and play well in these tournaments. You need a couple of the other players to really come out and play really strong. There's a Thai girl that's pretty exciting. She made the cut, but she didn't do much. I'm blanking on her name. I mean, but you need to have, you know, European. There was an Irish rookie that played and Donegan, and she looked pretty good for a while. Then she fell off. You just need to have a mixture of different stars. What makes the men so exciting is that on any given week, you literally pick 25 guys that have a shot to win it.
Yeah.
On the female, female tour, you just don't know as much.
And you look at, you know, on the male side, for example, Morikawa has the Asian descent. But with a name like Morikawa, that name sticks out a little bit more.
I got you.
And I think, you know, like I said, that's what the women are lacking. It feels like I couldn't tell you the difference between the players out there on the LPGA Tour. There's nothing that makes them unique to me. And I know that's speaking as an ugly American. Probably I sound awful. And I don't mean to. I'm not trying to be racist here. Please understand that. I'm just, you know, saying, you know, it's you're missing, like I said, that the girl that sticks out who can be, you know, the face of the LPGA Tour right now.
Yeah, they need someone that has the personality that can kind of get things done.
Yep.
And you know that's really where we sit there. But it was I enjoyed it because I was watching some Pebble, which I always enjoy to watch. Kev, you wanted to talk a little bit about Pat Fitzgerald, you said.
Well, that was a surprise. Last Friday, Northwestern announced the results of an internal investigation, and there's some allegations of hazing going on in the Northwestern football program. And they came out, and as part of it, you know, okay, Fitzgerald didn't know anything, but we're going to suspend him for 2 weeks without pay. We're going to limit some of their off-campus activities and this and that and really try to get a handle on the program. And then some of the other players, one of the ones who was the victim here, he came out with even more details. And there was a lot of sexual, almost sexual assault type of hazing that was going on. And basically the thought was, in this day and age, it looks terrible. It's a very bad look for Northwestern. There's a feeling that Pat Fitzgerald should have known what was going on, and he was fired on Monday.
Yeah, it's just Pat Fitzgerald's been there, 17 years, I think, and he played there as well.
Since 2006, he was a Northwestern legend. He was a two-time Defensive Player of the Year.
Absolutely. You just and he really did help build that program back to prominence. Northwestern's a consistent team. It's a good team. I mean, you hear a couple of names in the rumor mill. One that makes me upset is that Dave Clawson from Wake could be a guy that they look at over there, which would hurt me because I like watching Wake, as you know. And he's been a great Wake Forest coach. But just a shame about Fitzgerald. And if you don't have control of the, lack of institutional control is a major problem.
Yep.
And you're responsible for the team, regardless of what you knew and what you didn't know. I'm sure you heard something, and you have to sit there and get your head out of the sand and fix it, whether you're a first-year coach or a legend at a school like Fitzgerald was. That's pretty much it. Do you have any other topics that you want to go over here, Kev?
I think we covered just about all of it.
We did a full potpourri here tonight.
We did.
Well, anyway, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. Sanj Gino tonight, who's on vacation, but he'll be back and joining us next week. I'm Darren here with Kevin today. Hope you enjoy the show. Please download it any way you can download a podcast, whether it be, TuneIn, whether it be an Apple product, whether it be Spotify. We post a few things on Facebook here and there. Apparently a lot of people disagree with my Popovich take that he still ruins the league.
He's already ruined the summer league.
He's resting the kid already.
Wembanyama played two games and they said that's enough. You're done with the summer league. He's preparing Wembanyama for the regular season here.
Don't get me wrong, great coach. I'm not downplaying it. He had success even after Duncan and Robinson were gone. You know, he did well with Kawhi too in regular seasons. But nonetheless, I feel like Popovich. I know that that's changed and evolved. I think he was the guy that evolved it. Just like I don't really think Tony La Russa for having my starter go four. But anyway, that's just the way I take it and do it. Anyway, again, Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin. Gene will be back next week. Download the podcast. Share our stuff. Send it out to whoever you can. Talk to us on Facebook. Talk to us on Instagram. Whatever's easiest for you. We just want to produce a show that you guys like. So without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.